Have you ever worked harder than you've ever worked and still ended up somewhere where you never wanted to be? Not because you were lazy, not because you lacked faith, but and really not because you didn't care deeply about what you were building, but because the map you were following was wrong. And in ministry, that can look like growing attendance while shrinking spiritually. In business, it can look like increasing revenue while quietly losing the things that gave that revenue meaning. In leadership, whether you're an apostolic leader, a pastoral leader, prophetic, teaching, or evangelistic leader, it often looks like success on paper, but something very different underneath. And here's the part that's sometimes the hardest to face. The failure is rarely the event. The failure is the revelation. And it reveals the internal architecture that's been underneath the decisions all along. And if that architecture is built on image rather than integrity, on performance rather than formation, or approval rather than purpose, then it's entirely possible to succeed your way into collapse. And we're talking about that and more, and it's all right here, right now, and only on the Five Gifts Podcast. You're listening to the Five Gifts Podcast, a weekly show designed to equip leaders in the Spirit-filled church. I'm Bruce Ritter, and along with my co-host, Charles Russell, we offer insights for leading the local church in the fullest expression of Jesus. If you're interested in learning more about practical theology, the gifts of the Spirit, and spiritual disciplines, this is the show for you. Welcome to the Five Gifts Podcast. Welcome back to the Five Gifts Podcast. I'm Bruce Ritter alongside Charles Russell, and this is episode 4 in our Internal Foundation series. Today we're talking about redefining failure and success. I want to welcome you out on a beautiful Monday morning in North Carolina. Of course, we know you might be catching this by podcast or on our YouTube channel, and it could be a different day of the week for you. That's the beauty of on-demand resources. We're glad that you're with us and that we can come into your space today and share a little bit, a few things that we feel rather passionately about, and it's a good chance for us to process some things that Charles and I think, but also maybe share some insights that might be helpful for you. I want to wish all of our fathers a belated Happy Father's Day. Charles, I know mine was a special day. I hope yours was as well.
Absolutely. Great Father's Day. In fact, we celebrated Saturday was my wife and our 28th anniversary. And then yesterday was Father's Day, so it's just been a great weekend all the way around. I was going to wear it on the episode, but I decided not to. My Father's Day tie, it's filled with rhinestones and sequins. It says, Happy Father's Day, greatest dad ever. No, I'm just kidding. If you got something like that, hey, you're still a great dad. All right, just take one for the team. But no, great Father's Day. How are you doing, Bruce?
I'm doing okay. We had a nice weekend. My wife and daughter made carnitas for our little Father's Day dinner together, and that was fantastic. So had a great day at church as well. And by the way, North Carolina Tar Heels baseball team is clashing with Oklahoma in winner-take-all for the College World Series National Championship. And so that's a little bit on our minds today, even though neither of us are just huge baseball fans, but we are Tar Heel fans.
That's right. I haven't followed college baseball this season or really any ever, but we're still Tar Heels, and we have to support our world domination in all things
100%
sport. So
100%
go Tar Heels. Even though I've got a lot of family in Oklahoma, and I'm a Sooners fan in some things too, but if it's Tar Heels and the Sooners, I have to cut my family loyalty ties. Sorry, family. you're out. We've been building this series in a deliberate sequence. Episode 1 established the inside-out premise that lasting transformation begins at the most interior level of a person and works outward, and that no external technique or system can compensate for an unstable interior foundation. Episode 2, we went deeper into paradigms, those mental maps through which we interpret reality, and the specific difference between a fixed and growth orientation towards potential. Episode 3 addressed proactivity, the gap between stimulus and response, and those four human endowments that make it accessible, and the discipline of developing it systematically.
Yeah, and today we're going to apply all of that to the two concepts that are most frequently distorted in leadership culture, and those are the concepts of failure and success, because most leaders are operating with definitions of both that are not only incomplete, but they can be actively misleading. Definitions that can produce decades of genuine effort, but directed in the wrong direction.
We're going to cover how the lens through which we see shapes everything we lead, the specific disease that corrupts leadership when image replaces character, the deterministic thinking that really strips the leaders of agency and the critical balance between production and the capacity to produce, what proactive leadership looks like in fivefold ministry context, and what it means to reorient your future leadership life around the right definition of success before it's too late to matter.
Yeah, and before we can talk about redefining success and failure, we need to go one level deeper into something we've touched on throughout this series, and not just what we see, but how we see. And because in leadership, I think the quality of vision determines really the quality of your direction. And a distorted lens can produce distorted leadership regardless of how much effort is applied through it. Charles, I'm reminded, Stephen Covey made the image famous, although it's been used, I think, in psychological exercises. You've probably seen it online, but it's the image where it looks like a young woman or an old woman, depending on your perspective. The lines are the same. They're on the page, the drawing. Basically, two people can look at it and see it entirely different. And neither person is really fabricating what they see. Both are seeing genuinely, but what they're looking at is shaped really by the conditioning they brought to the page before they looked at it. And we do that in so many walks of life, and that's true of leadership. You can have two pastors that are facing the same congregation and seeing the same organizational downturn. One sees catastrophe. The other sees an opportunity to build something more durable than what was there before. Well, the facts are identical. The interpretation, though, is entirely different. And the interpretation is really what drives the decision. Now, listen, leaders love information. They want information. But we really don't lead from facts. That's a misnomer. The truth is we lead from paradigms. And a distorted paradigm produces distorted leadership. Not because the leader is insincere or incompetent, but because they're navigating from an inaccurate map. And effort applied through the wrong map just accelerates the confusion rather than resolving anything. You arrive at the wrong destination faster and with greater conviction that you have been doing the right things. And this happens in specific ways across the fivefold gifts. An apostolic leader can mistake expansion for obedience. Building more of what heaven called for was depth. A prophetic leader can mistake emotional intensity for spiritual accuracy. A pastoral leader can mistake people-pleasing for genuine love, giving people what they want rather than what they really need. A teaching leader can mistake information transfer for transformation. That's a common one. An evangelistic leader can mistake decisions for disciples, counting responses rather than tracking formation. Again, same territory, wrong map. And the map feels right because everyone around the leader is affirming the results that the map is producing, which is precisely why the interior work of this series matters so much. The external affirmation of a wrong map does not make the map right. In fact, over the long haul, it just makes course correction even harder.
Man, that's truth right there, Bruce. Getting the right map and reading and following, navigating with the right map, especially in regards, I like how you broke that down in the fivefold ministry. It made me think about a couple churches that I've pastored previously. And I tend to track in that apostolic vein of that's just how I'm wired and gifted. And so anytime I go into a new church, man, I see the opportunity, I see the vision, I see the great things that can happen. And I'm come to build. You know, we're gonna take over the world. We're gonna dominate. And that's just kind of my default map that I go into those situations with. But what I've learned is that may not be the map that God has for that moment and for that season, for that church. And so I've had to actually, this episode, this series has given me language for the kind of frameworks that I've been working through is having to make those internal changes to switch to different maps. And so when those, that pastoral tenure was over and I could look back on the ministry that took place, it wasn't necessarily building great things. It could have been a pastoral gifting that really took place, or teaching, mm-hmm. the teaching gifts, any number of the gifts. But now I think what you're saying, it really resonates with me, because it's proven out that if we'll do that internal work, man, the Lord can use us in a great way if we'll get on His map. Yeah. And navigate with Him. So look, when the wrong map's in place long enough, it produces a specific condition in leaders that's really worth naming directly, because it's far more common than most leadership cultures are willing to acknowledge, and its consequences compound quietly over time. So there's a condition that develops in leaders who have been operating from the personality ethic long enough, who have been building and managing, projecting an image of strength, of competence, spiritual authority, you know, without attending to the interior foundation that would make that image genuinely true. We might call it the disease of needing to look strong rather than becoming strong. And it's present in pulpits, in boardrooms, in nonprofit leadership at a scale that the leadership development industry rarely addresses honestly. The character ethic, however, asks a foundational question. It asks, who are you? What's the quality of your interior life, of your integrity, your genuine humility, your faithfulness in the things no one is watching? The personality ethic asks a different question. The question is this: how do you appear? What does your communication project? What does your presence communicate? Your brand convey? These questions can coexist, and when they do, they become dangerous when the second displaces the first, when appearing strong becomes more important than actually becoming strong. So Jesus, really, he was precise about this. He described leaders whose exterior was carefully maintained and whose interior was unaddressed corruption. So it's not a failure of talent or gifting, but it is a failure of formation. And the reason it's so difficult to address is that gifting can carry a leader further than integrity can sustain. Charisma is a real thing. Anointing is a real thing. And both of them can create a window of apparent success that outlasts the interior condition that would eventually bring accountability. So Paul's instruction to Timothy is precise for exactly this reason. Watch your life and your doctrine closely. Not just doctrine, life. Because leadership failure is almost always an interior collapse before it is an exterior scandal. The public moment is rarely the beginning of the problem. It's the revelation of a process that's been underway for a long time beneath the level of what the external metrics were measuring. Emerson makes an observation, and it really cuts to the center of this. What you are speaks so loudly that I can't hear what you say. In leadership, people eventually discern the substance underneath the style. You can manage the appearance of gifting for a season, but you can't manage the appearance of fruit indefinitely. The fruit will eventually tell the truth about the root. Mic drop.
Charles, you just got real. Gosh, what a powerful reminder that anointing, charisma, it's a fast thing. It has momentum. It gets eyes on what's happening. But if your character doesn't have the infrastructure to sustain, boy, that the end is not pleasant. And we've seen time and time again, and that's why it's so important, the spiritual leaders, you develop your inner life. You develop your character, because if you don't, you're not just creating an organizational disaster in the waiting, but it's possible that you're going to take other people down in their faith. And boy, we've seen that time and time again. It's just a timeless truth. And you managed to weave in Emerson again. How do you do that, Charles?
It's just again.
But I love I love the quote. What you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear what you say. Man, such absolute mic drop. Absolutely. One of the most reliable mechanisms, I think, by which leaders avoid confronting, you know, that gap between image and character. Let's call it charisma and character, or anointing and character, I think is a specific kind of thinking that sounds reasonable on the surface, but quietly it's kind of corrosive underneath. It's the thinking that locates the cause of every problem somewhere other than the person doing the thinking. And so this is what we like to call the blame map. And it's rooted in deterministic thinking. Now, what is deterministic thinking? Well, that's the habit of attributing your current outcomes, again, to those forces outside your control. We've talked about this on previous episodes, and it's one of the fastest ways that a leader can insulate themselves from the growth that their situation is actually calling for. Now, the language of it is familiar, where you'll hear someone say, I'm just wired this way, or maybe it's something you say. I'm wired this way. This is how my family has always operated. This is the culture of this denomination, or this is the culture of our church. That this is just the reality of the market. Now what's happening in those statements? There's truth there. Each of those statements contain something true. A temperament is real. A family system is real. A church culture is real. A market condition is real, but the problem is not acknowledging these realities. The problem is using them as the final explanation for outcomes that a leader's own choices have contributed to producing. You think back to the Genesis narrative. The pattern appears at the very first moment of human accountability. Adam blames Eve. Eve blames the serpent. Now, both are describing real, contributing dynamic factors, but neither was taking responsibility that God held each of them to a different standard. And that's the model. Contributing factors are real, and responsibility is non-transferable. The leader is always accountable for their response to the conditions they're in, regardless of how those conditions came to be. So in ministry context, it can sound like, you know, my congregation is so resistant to change. My board doesn't understand vision. My staff is not spiritually mature enough to carry this. Absolutely, each of those can be accurate. Each of them as a final explanation, though, is a way of outsourcing responsibility for outcomes that the leader's own formation and decision-making have shaped. The inside-out question is not, why are my circumstances difficult? Instead, it's giving these circumstances, what is mine to own? What's within my circle of influence? What does faithful leadership require of me here in this situation, regardless of what I can't control? The question doesn't always produce a comfortable answer, does it? But it's the question that produces growth. And the kingdom, as Charles said before, it doesn't advance through victims, it advances through stewards. People who take responsibility for what's been entrusted to them, rather than managing a case for why it was someone else's fault that the harvest didn't come.
Yeah, so there's a framework that really holds together everything we've been describing. The distorted maps, the image management, the blame thinking, and it gives it a single precise diagnosis. It's a principle about the relationship between production and the capacity that produces it. And getting it wrong, really, it's one of the most common ways leaders succeed their way into eventual collapse. You've heard this fable before. It's very simple. A farmer has a goose, and it lays a golden egg every day. But impatient with the pace of one egg per day, the farmer kills the goose to get all the eggs at once. And what happens is he gets nothing. He's destroyed the asset that was producing the results he wanted in the pursuit of accelerating those results. The application to leadership is direct and sobering. Every leader is managing a relationship between two things: the outputs they're working to produce, and the capacity, the people, the relationships, the trust, the interior health, the spiritual foundation that make those outputs possible. So when that relationship is healthy, production and capacity grow together. But when it's violated, when capacity is consumed in the pursuit of production, the outputs improve temporarily and then collapse because the asset that was generating them has been depleted. And this happens in ministry in ways that are so common, they've almost become expected. Volunteers pushed past sustainability in the name of the vision until they burn out and disappear. Staff are driven at a pace that produces results in the short term and attrition in the medium term. Congregations asked to give, to serve, to produce without adequate investment in their formation, their rest, their genuine development. The eggs keep coming for a while, and then all of a sudden, the goose is gone. It happens in the leader personally as well. Look, you can sacrifice your marriage for the ministry and eventually discover that you've built something impressive on a foundation that is crumbling at home. You can drive your body at a pace that your ambition demands and your physiology cannot sustain. You can invest so completely in your platform and your output that the interior life, the prayer, the formation, the genuine encounter with God that's supposed to be the source of everything you're producing is slowly starved of the attention it requires. One day you wake up with everything the metrics said success looks like. But something essential is missing. And what's missing? That's failure. It's not because you lost. It's because you won the wrong thing at the cost of the things that actually matter. And so the correction is not to stop caring about production. It's to care about the goose with at least as much intentionality as you care about the eggs. To build a leadership life in which the capacity to produce is treated as the most essential asset you steward and maintain it accordingly.
Charles, that goose keeps giving us some golden eggs for this series as we look at that simple parable.
Yeah.
That's such a powerful idea that you can't stop caring about production, but you still have to take care of what's producing your output. And so I think, again, just a very important thing that really syncs up well with kind of the rest of our podcast episode today, because the alternative to the reactive pattern that we've been describing, things like image management, the blame thinking, the consumption of capacity in pursuit of production, is a specific and demanding orientation toward leadership that we've been building toward throughout this series. In the context of fivefold ministry, it has both personal and organizational dimensions that we need to take a look at. And so let's think about proactive leadership in a fivefold context. If you remember from episode 3, if you can't, please go back and take a look at it. You can also listen to it, obviously, on any of our podcast platforms. But in that episode, we established that between stimulus and response, there's a gap. And what we mean by that is that the quality of a leader's maturity is demonstrated by what happens in that gap. A criticism arrives, a key team member leaves, a significant plan collapses, and the gap between that stimulus and the leader's response is where the formative work of this entire series either proves itself or reveals its absence. Now, in fivefold ministry, the gap shows up with specific textures depending on the gift. Let me give you an example. An apostolic leader whose expansion plan stalls faces the gap between that disappointment and their next decision. And whether they respond from vision that's anchored in revelation or from some reactive impulse to protect their record and their reputation. Well, I think you see that. I think you can see that visually. Now, the same thing can be true of a prophetic leader. Let's say a prophetic leader who delivers a word that is poorly received faces the gap between that rejection and their subsequent posture. Will they hold the word with humility or harden themselves in defensiveness? A pastoral leader whose genuine care is met with suspicion or accusation can face the gap between that wounding and their continued willingness to be present. In each case, if you remember, the four endowments we described in episode 3 are what the gap is actually made of. Self-awareness. Again, the capacity to notice what's happening in you before it becomes what you do. And then your imagination, the capacity to envision a response that's shaped by your values rather than your conditioning. And then conscience. Conscience is that internal compass that anchors the choice in something more durable than the emotional state of the moment. And then lastly, that fourth endowment, independent will, the capacity to act from those three, even when everything in the situation is pulling toward reaction. Again, the practical geography of this is the circle of influence. A reactive leader in ministry is going to spend their time in the circle of concern. They're going to waste a lot of energy on the opinions of critics, the decisions of those above them, and the behavior of a difficult congregation. They're going to be concerned with the conditions of culture that they're trying to reach. Proactive leaders are going to invest their energy in the circle of influence, their own prayer life, their own character, the specific relationships and responsibilities they're positioned to affect. And Charles, I just think that is so applicable when we think of the influence that you have in leading a congregation, leading an organization. Usually the richest influence you have is going to be in the smaller group. Your staff team, your executive team, your influence is about shaping them. And again, spending time on your circle of influence, I think, is infinitely more valuable than spending time in the circle of concerns. Genuine change in a leader changes what the leader produces. Think about that. Let me say that again. Genuine change in a leader produces what the leader produces. I've told a young colleague for years, I said, you need to be the health that you want other people to experience in your congregation. And what a leader produces, again, is going to shape what the people they lead eventually become.
And that's some great wisdom that you're imparting to that young leader and to us today, Bruce. Man, the shape of what we're leading is really comes from what the leader's producing. And all of this, what we're talking about today, it really converges on a single concrete and really deeply personal question. I think that's worth pressing into before the episode ends. Because the most important leadership decision that most of us are going to make is not strategic or organizational. They're orientational. They're decisions about what we're ultimately building toward and whether the ladder we're climbing is leaning against the right wall. So here's an exercise worth taking seriously. Imagine for a moment you're at your own memorial service, all right? You've got a view into your own memorial service, not decades from now, but it's uncomfortably soon, all right? The people who've known you most closely, they stand up to speak, your spouse, your children, the people that you've led most directly, the colleagues who worked alongside you. What do you want not necessarily what do you want to hear them say, but what do you hear them say? Not what you hope they say about your ministry results or your organizational accomplishments, but what do you hear them say about your presence, about the quality of your attention, of your faithfulness in private, of your integrity between what you preached and then how you live, your genuine love for the people closest to you? Faithful, present, honest, courageous, kind. Those are all character words. Driven, gifted, visionary, present. productive. Those are all those are capacity words. Both matter, but if the second list is longer and more certain than the first, if you'd be more confident about what they would say about your output than about who you were, that gap is worth addressing now while there's still time to close it. This is the this is what beginning with the end in mind actually means. We're not setting goals for your career or for the organization, but deciding who you're going to be, specifically examined, chosen, and then measuring every significant decision against that decision. The end you have in mind is the person you want to have been. And the question every week, every season, every leadership decision carries is, am I becoming that person? Now, in fivefold terms, the apostolic leader's success is not the scale of what they built, it's whether they built what heaven sent them to build. The prophetic leader's success is not the accuracy of their words, it's whether those words were spoken in the love and humility that makes truth genuinely fruitful. The pastoral leader's success is not the size of the congregation they manage, it's the depth of maturity and the people they form. The teaching leader's success is not the comprehensiveness of their content, it's the obedience it produced. And then the evangelistic leader's success is not the number of decisions, it's the number of disciples. Gift without formation becomes distortion. And every fivefold gift operating without the interior foundation this series has been describing will eventually drift from its true purpose and it's going to drift from its true purpose and then produce something that resembles fruit from a distance but doesn't hold the weight of genuine harvest.
Here's a question to carry from this episode. I think it's one worth sitting with and asking yourself slowly and honestly before you move too quickly from it. If you would, just take one failure from your recent past, and not to relive it with regret, not to rehearse the external factors that contributed to it, but just examine it as a window into the internal architecture underneath it. What map were you navigating from? Were you chasing approval, control, performance, image? Or were you walking in principle, in genuine alignment with the person you've decided to be and the God you've been called to represent?
Yeah, absolutely. Failure may not be your enemy. It may be your most honest teacher, the one voice in your leadership life that's willing to tell you the truth about the foundation, not because it wants to diminish you, but because the thing you're building deserves to stand. Success in the end is not the absence of failure. It's becoming the kind of person God can trust with genuine fruit. And in the kingdom, who you are becoming always matters more than what you're building.
Listen, if you want support in some of the interior work that our series is describing, if you want to engage the questions and the formation of your life and character with someone who will walk alongside you and connect with you, then you can connect with us at charlesrusselltraining.com, charlesrussellministries.com, or coachingcardia.com. We offer spiritual life coaching, leadership development for leaders who are ready to build on the right foundation. Now, next episode, we're going to continue the internal foundation series by defining something that Charles just brought up a few moments ago. We want to talk about how you define your present reality and your vision reality and what it means to begin with the end in mind, not as a goal-setting exercise, but truly as the most fundamental act of leadership integrity. You won't want to miss it. And we'll see you next time right here on the Five Gifts Podcast. You've been listening to the Five Gifts Podcast. If you would like to take the next step as a spiritual leader, we invite you to visit either of our websites or contact us for leadership coaching. We can help you reach the next level in your own growth and leadership. We provide leadership, spiritual gift, and personality assessments that give you a better grasp of your leadership style. And we also create a customized growth plan that empowers you to reach your full kingdom potential. We can't wait to hear from you.